All right, I don't know what time it is on your clock, but I know what I'm getting ready for. It is time for the Professional CISO Podcast with David Malico.
Welcome, one and all, to the Professional CISO Podcast. I'm your host, David Malico. This show is an exploration of those topics necessary to professionalize the role of the CISO. Today, we have a special guest. We have a CISO that has over 25 years in operational experience in cybersecurity and IT. Some interesting facts. One, he is a veteran.
Yes.
So shout out on that one. Writer, speaker, avid mentor, but also commercial pilot and flight instructor. Mm-hmm.
That's
and
it.
Then also an avid study of Chinese philosophy.
Yes.
Excellent. So before we begin, though, before we get to our guest, I want to talk about a couple shout outs. So we have two different foundation sponsors that were kind enough, that saw the vision of what this podcast could be. And they came on early. And one is Interpris Security. I want to talk about CEO Nick Lanta, Michael Jenks, which is the CTO, and Ian Roth, the head of product over there. Those are all the founders. They're over there stitching everything together when it comes to continuous threat and exposure management with this intelligence layer that they put together. So check them out. They're doing a great job, and we appreciate their support, as well as ContraForce with Stan Golubchik, the CEO over there, as well as Ricky Melendez, which is the CTO. So these guys, they're pushing the boundaries when it comes to hyper automation with SecOps. Again, go check those guys out. If you're especially from the MSP and MSSP space, they're doing a great job to help you hyper automate your security response and help elevate your business. So now let's talk about being a professional CISO. In today's episode, we have our guest, Pat Benoit. Currently, Pat is the president of Cyber Risk Insights. I want to make sure I get that right.
Correct.
And then most recently, you were the CISO at Brinks Company.
Correct.
Prior to that, you were the global head of GRC and the BISO at CBRE.
Yes.
And then you were the deputy CISO of Cheetah Digital prior to that.
Yes.
And then also, I want to make sure everybody knows that Pat and I know each other very well. We used to work at Pro Systems together a long time ago.
Yes.
Welcome, Pat.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here and pleased to get to talk to you a little bit. Longstanding. Thank you for your service too, URA.
Appreciate it.
We'll give you an URA for you.
Yeah. Hua.
Yeah.
For the Army.
There you go.
There you go. So what I also like to do with my guest first out of the gate is, Pat, I want to hear your journey. Give me that 1 to 2 minute. Pat Benoit, how did you get started in tech, cyber? Kind of give me that arc, right? The quick 1 to 2 minute arc that takes us through who you were from the beginning. I'm talking even as a kid, where you kind of got interested in tech or cyber all the way through to now.
Well, when I was a kid, they didn't really have tech. So we'll just start with that. I mean, tech was that the door latched when you closed it kind of thing. But I actually got involved in when I was trying to go to college the first time out of high school. And I was trying to figure out what to do. At that point in time, there was research that said that the big fields for the future were to be an accountant that had technology background. So an accounting major with a technology minor. I figured out really soon, and hopefully not to offend any accountants, but I just did not want to count them beans.
Yes.
Didn't. So I said, well, let me flip that a little bit. So I did technology with the accounting minor instead. But that lasted for about a year. I quickly learned that if you decide that the class you're taking is not something you want to continue taking, that you actually have to withdraw from the class. You can't just quit going.
Very, very handy.
Yeah, they tend to give you those bad grades when you do that. So I left there. I joined the military to get away from the same folks I'd been hanging with all in high school. Did the military thing. And in the military, after doing combat arms for a while, I figured out I needed a career. So I branch transferred to Finance Corps.
Uh-huh.
And I figured that might give me a career. And that was the very beginnings of information systems in the military, in the Army. And I was the assistant division controller for the 1st Cav Division.
Gotcha.
So I had budget responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the first one to automate their budget process using DBase 1.
Wow.
Adam Green's DBase 1. I had the manual, you know.
Yeah.
And because there were no print drivers out of DBase, I had to use Lotus 1-2-3. I had to port it to Lotus 1-2-3 so I could have the print drivers so that I could green bar print the 20 million or so odd dollar budget that I was dealing with.
I think you're giving some people some flashbacks when they're listening to this
right now. No kidding. Anyway, but fast forward, I got into, you know, I did that stuff for a while. I did programming. I did, you know, operations. I did all that kind of stuff. And then I went to, came to Dallas and did my consulting. I started doing, working for a consulting company and figured out that they were charging hundreds of dollars for me and paying me $50.
Right.
So I went out on my own, did that for about 16 years. That company is still a boutique company here in Dallas. It's doing well still. And came back to Enterprise, where we met at Perot, and then you kind of covered the rest of that, except for the brief stint, 3 years at Experian before Cheetah. So that was the first kind of touch into more focused cyber.
Right.
Building the BISO BIO program.
Right. Yeah. And we actually ran into each other there as well.
So, yes.
But we can only go back so far.
That's right.
So that's right. Full gap. Good to go. So I want to ask a very, you know, again, kind of the point of this podcast.
Sure.
And so very overarching question. Do we need to professionalize the role of the CISO? If the answer is yes, what does that mean to you by doing that? And if the answer is no, which is perfectly okay if it is, I'm not setting you up. If it's no, why is that? What's your opinion on the no?
Yeah, that's a drop a pebble in the water kind of question that I, you know, I asked back in 2019 and actually wrote an article that posed the question, should CISOs be licensed? Mm. Should they be certified and licensed much like any of the other professions like doctor, lawyer, architect, electrician, whatever? Right. About half the people said I was crazy and about half the people said it was a great idea. So I think we're still probably in that place. Mm-hmm. I think some level of, you know, assurance could help us as a professional, but I'm not sure it's done any real good for, like, say, let's say finance professionals.
Right.
There's no requirement to have that CPA in there, but it helps maybe discriminate between one person and another one candidate, but I don't think it necessarily helps. So do we need a level of assurance that makes sure we're doing our job correctly and that we're trained to do our job? Yeah, maybe. But does it need to be a full licensure? Probably not.
So if it's not a full licensure, is it a case of where there's this evolution or these outside forces that are acting upon the CISO role? What are your observations around that? What are you seeing? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, well, I see it evolving much like a CIO role. I mean, you can remember the days where the head of IT was the director of IT, and then eventually it became the VP of IT, and then it became the CIO who worked for the CFO.
Right.
And eventually they got their seat at the table when they proved their business acumen and they showed that they weren't just tech geeks. I think we're seeing the same thing in the CISO role.
Okay.
Having said that, though, I think that we need a way to educate the community, too, to be able to understand the difference between how the CISO kind of evolved. First CISOs in 98, big banks, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But really, it didn't take off until we had that thing called PCI. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, there was a self-imposed mandate for credit card payment providers that they had to have a named CISO.
Right.
And in doing that, we had a lot of smaller companies that, you know, scrambled around, what are we going to do now? And they went, oh, David, you do our firewall rules, don't you? Oh, yeah. You're our new CISO. Great. But, you know, where's that experiential training or learning to get to that point? Now, you know, I think that they were great that they parlayed that into the next bigger role, the next bigger role, the next bigger role. But I think by and large, we still have a fairly overwhelming technical slant to the CISO role.
Right.
That's got to change. And I tell aspiring CISOs all the time, stop chasing the technical acumen. Start learning sales, marketing, operations, finance, accounting, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. That's what's going to make you a better CISO.
Do you find that we, as typical humans, we run to where we're comfortable?
Sure.
Is that the case of what you're talking about there with the technology where we wrap that blanket around us, we're comfortable there? How can we push ourselves out? And so that's what I always like to take out of these. Like, what is that practical advice you can give, the takeaways actionable today to say, how do you get into those different areas that you just listed?
Well, and I would say, again, you get you learn those areas, but those to me are still kind of technical areas. They're just technical in a different domain. So really start studying that leadership and learn the leadership quality of, I don't have to know everything. I just have to know where to get everything. I need to surround myself with people that can help me do those things. So a CISO that's very technically oriented, if they're a good leader, then they might have a deputy or one of their senior leaders that works for them very focused on the softer skill side of the house, or the GRC side of the house, or the customer facing, the BISO side of the house, and that makes them complementary. So I think that's important. And I think we do a horrible job, by and large, as just as companies and leaders, of teaching the next generation how to access and embrace their emotional side too. We're very cold and calculated, command and control, command and control, logical. We're not in a command and control environment anymore, except in an emergency.
Right.
We're in more of a, as Stephen M.R. Covey Jr. says, we're more in a trust and inspire kind of leadership role. So we have to develop trust both ways. They have to trust us. We have to give them trust. But those are soft skills that most people don't focus on. So start focusing on those soft skills.
If I know myself and seek self-improvement, I know that I don't have those soft skills right now, where can I go? What can I do to help develop those?
There are more books and videos and opportunities to learn those things than you can possibly even count, you know, stars in the sky.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Yeah. Any couple quick
recommendations? Yeah, first one I tell everybody, go read Extreme Ownership. I mean,
love it.
Yeah, a great book, Jocko Willink, you know, amazing idea. The prime concept out of that, if you take nothing else out of it, take the concept that if you fail, and you're working for me and you fail, my first question should not be, why'd you do that? My first question should be, what didn't I give you to be successful? Right. What did I not do as a leader to give you the opportunity to succeed?
And question two is, what did you learn?
And what did you learn? That's right. That's right. Exactly right. So that's a huge book. And then I would start getting into some things that feel more like relationship couples kinds of things. One that I always use to teach my team is a book called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz.
Heard of that, yeah.
And I basically tell my team, here's four rules to live by. I'll live by them. You live by them. We'll be good. Highest integrity at all time. Always be as honest as you can. Nothing is personal. So when David comes in and he's kind of ramping stuff up and he's getting a little frustrated, my question should not be to press back, because right. now we get into Chinese philosophy. You know, yang against yang doesn't work.
No,
you're just fighting.
Right.
So the better option is to listen and try and understand and empathize
right.
where that's coming from. David, what happened? Are you got something else going on?
Right.
Should we take this up at another time or whatever? So it's not personal though.
Right.
The third is, don't make assumptions. So it's okay to observe, to see things, and make decisions based on the observations you have, but don't just make assumptions about it. That's just, it's unfair and it's dangerous.
Right.
And the last is, always do your best. If you're always working to do your best and you're giving 100% focus on what you're doing, then you can't ask anything else.
Excellent. Great start. I want to take a moment to talk about today's sponsor, Interpris Security. Interpris optimizes defenses to help CISOs and security teams focus on the threats that matter most and reduce their threat exposure. The Interpris Threat Exposure Management Platform analyzes the dynamic relationship between the defense surface, adversarial tactics, techniques, and procedures, and exploitable vulnerabilities that are likely to be used to attack an organization. With continuous monitoring, organizations know exactly how well they are prepared for existing and breaking events. To see Interpris in action and to learn how you can gain an unbiased view of your security posture and defend against the most relevant security threats and vulnerabilities, visit www.interprissecurity.com/HVM. We appreciate Interpris Security support as a foundation sponsor of the Professional CISO podcast. Check them out today.
Okay, let's talk about where the CISO role is going. So we talk everywhere, conferences, dinners, all that good stuff about interaction with the board. How do you approach guiding your board, right? Because this is a new thing for CISOs. We talk about that technical piece, moving into interaction with the board. how am I guiding that board around the risk that we're seeing in cyber? How do I communicate that? Not just communicate, but just the risk oversight generally.
And this is that transition from, as we say all the time, the little C in CISO to the big C in CISO. And a lot of that, again, I go back to soft skills, because you got to build relationships and you have to understand, you have to meet people where they are. You can't go to the board and meet them as if they, A, understand technology, and B, understand cybersecurity. That's not going to work.
Right.
So, you know, the old know your audience. So develop the relationship and tell a story that they can understand and they can relate to. What are boards most interested in? Reducing the risk so that nothing impacts their bottom line and making money for the stakeholders. Realistically, you know, that's usually the mission of business.
Right.
So try and put things in terms of you know, monetary value. When you start looking at risk, that's a very ethereal thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like quality.
Right.
You know, you'll know it when you see it.
Right.
And risk is the same way. But do what you can to quantify a risk, but then take the number and somehow work to translate that into dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So look at the average cost of a breach and say, if we were 100% effective, that's what it might cost us if we get breached. But, oh, there's more. We're only 50% effective based on the maturity assessment we just did.
Right.
So that means we're double, that's a weight of 2 times the potential impact.
Right.
So now you have a dollar you can work with. And then you can say things like, hey, if I invest, if you invest this $100,000, $200,000, whatever dollars into improving this aspect of the program, it should raise our maturity by X, which means we would be 75% effective. So now instead of $4 million potential, it's only $3 million or something like that.
Right.
That's how you get to numbers that they can start to relate to, is look at effectiveness. You can be efficient without being effective.
Right.
What we need is to be effective.
Right. Excellent point. Thank you. So you've been around. You've been doing this for quite a long time.
Yes.
Had a wide range of folks that you've reported into. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a challenge now, or I can see a challenge happening. How about that? That's probably a better way to put it. See a challenge happening where we're trying to develop as a role, right? And yet we're still in these positions where we're reporting to CIOs maybe most of the time, let's say CFOs a lot of the time, maybe a COO here and there. For those folks that are out there in those type of roles, what advice do you have for them as far as how to approach that, how to have this conversation? Because it's not natural, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to grow. We're trying to develop. We're actually trying to outsize where you feel like we're at right now. How do you approach that with those leaders that you report to?
Yeah, I mean, very, very touchy, but it comes down to relationship again. It comes down to the concept of mentoring up. You know, we focus on mentoring down all the time, but we don't spend enough time focusing on mentoring up. Again, it's understanding where that person is. You know, if you're dealing with a leader who is relatively young or immature from a leadership point of view, not in a bad way, it's just a fact, the limited experience or something, because of size of team difference or size of company difference or just practical experience, then you need to recognize that. And you need to develop a relationship such that you can one-on-one offer ideas.
Mm.
And what I found is you usually, if you put yourself in the boat with them, then usually that's the easier way to do it. An old sales technique, feel, felt, found.
Right.
And so I understand how you feel, David. I felt that way myself, you know. But what I found is if I do X, then that kind of solves the problem.
Right.
So that's why you study sales, is there's lots of techniques there to build relationships. But always give them a defensible position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you mentor them. You by example, you show them ways to lead people there.
And have their back. Right?
And have their back.
I think they always have their back. They need to feel like they are supported at all times, that you're not going around or you're not, you know, trying to do something in the shadows.
Oh, never go around. Never, ever go around. Now, having your back does not mean I'm not going to tell you the truth or be transparent.
Correct.
And having your back should mean that you're not going to get offended, because nothing is personal.
Right.
If I tell you about something, because I'm looking out for the best interest of A, the company, B, my team, and C, you know, me, you and me.
Right.
And so you can't take offense to that. You can disagree.
Right.
But again, it's not personal.
And And it can also be a bigger betrayal if you don't tell them.
Exactly.
Right? Especially
exactly.
when we're talking about like the risk, right? We see risk a lot of folks don't in organizations,
exactly.
right? And so if I'm keeping that, I'm holding on to that, and I'm not necessarily communicating that in an effective way or to spare feelings or conflict, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
If anything, it's almost the opposite of what most people might think. It's one of those where they're, hey,
exactly.
It's almost a betrayal in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the idea that so many of the CISOs, we still report to CIOs
right.
and CTOs. I think I just read a stat from, I forget where it's from, but it, you know, it's online. Google it, right? it was like 60%. Or 55%, 56% of CISOs still report to CIOs, mm-hmm. and another like 17% or so report to CTOs. So if you look at that, you're near 70% are reporting to a technology head.
Right.
And here's the rub. I'd say well in excess of 90% of all the risks that you're trying to report on is their technology.
Correct.
So unless you have that kind of relationship where you can be transparent and nobody takes anything personal and you can be respectful, let's always remember you have to be respectful.
Tact.
You're reporting, it's a conflict of interest.
Yep.
And that's why most of the big financial institutions and stuff nowadays, they actually will ding you on third-party risk management if you say the CISO reports to CIO.
Mm.
They will say, whoa, that's not cool. Conflict of interest.
Conflict of interest, separation of duties.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Well, we've reached that point where we're going to start diving into the 10 questions.
All righty.
So what I always like to tell folks is this is a human story. We are in this together, and we always like to know more about our folks. And so I've stole these 10 questions from a certain spot. Hopefully, you know, people go out there and they may know, they may not. It's like 50-50, maybe even less than that. But what I like to use these to, they're not necessarily a short answer, and you can feel the fill in if you want to, but typically they're a little more rapid pace. So here we go. 10 questions for Pat Benoit.
All righty.
What's your favorite word?
Right now, and it changes,
mm-hmm.
right now it is, there's two really, but grace and serve.
Mm.
So you need to let go of the things that don't serve you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be willing to give people grace and understand where they are.
I like it. Love it. What is your least favorite word?
Right now, I think it might be AI.
Because every conference and every dinner you go to.
It's so overused and it's so inaccurately used and it's not defined well. And we have, you know, major news publications that are touting it. And so executives look at it and like, oh my God, we got to do it. And they're not willing to fully understand it yet. And so, yeah, I think right now that's the one.
So shameless plug, episode 5
yeah.
of the podcast was with a CEO of an AI company.
But
I walked away from that even as an interviewer, but then I listened to it later and I would say, go listen to that. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And it cuts a lot of the hype and it really gives some actionable things. So again, selfless plug.
Well,
for
I have
sure.
no opinion about that. So,
of course not. Yeah. No. What area of your work do you find most interesting?
So I think in some ways a little bit of the odd duck in that I really love the building of teams and the mm-hmm. working with the people and
yes.
doing all the, you know, a lot of people complain about, oh, we got to do performance reviews and we got to do this mentoring.
Oh,
all that people stuff. I like that
yes.
because I like the interaction with people.
I
also, of course, like the facing element, you
yes.
know, the customer facing element.
Yes.
That's why I embraced the dark side years ago and accepted the fact that everything we do is about selling
yes.
in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So don't fight it. Just be a good salesperson.
What area of your work is the most challenging for you?
I think the most challenging is that we are in a situation where, again, this is little C, big C, where we're given all of the responsibility and liability of a big C, but we're given the authority of a little C.
Hmm.
And that's incredibly challenging because again, that's in some ways a recipe for failure.
Right. In the long, you know,
in the long run,
given
yeah.
enough time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Odds are against you.
What sound or noise do you love?
Water, water rippling, usually like a brook or waves crashing or any kind of water sound. I'm pretty much a water person from birth. I mean, I competed in swimming I learned to swim at age 3. I started competing at age 5 and I didn't quit until probably about 10 or 15 years ago.
Love it.
And so water.
Water. What sound or noise do you hate?
Hmm. I haven't been in direct operational work since the Perot days. Right. So I would have said, oh, it's the beep on the phone, right? because you know something's gone wrong.
Yes.
I don't know. I think sound is a wonderful thing. I don't think I have a sound I hate. You know, I probably don't enjoy those you know, screeching sounds and yes. things like that, and horror sounds right. and fearful sounds. But, you know, sound is one of those elements. My music tastes run the gamut.
Oh, yes.
So I like sound.
Yeah. Okay. You have options on this one.
Okay.
What's your favorite curse word?
Oh, wow. I don't curse that often because I think I can usually try and find better words to say what I mean. I get a lot of feedback for coming from an age before my time. Mm-hmm. My parents were 40 when I was born as the oldest. And so for me, like Robin Hood is Errol Flynn. Mm-hmm. It's not
right.
Kevin Costner or whomever. So hearing words like, dang damn it, I get laughed at.
Yes.
But I love that. I love that. You know, it harkens back to a different time.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would like to, and actually I'm going to try and do this some. I would like to get more into a wellness or help kind of scenario where you can actually feel some a more direct connection with helping people. Mm-hmm. Kelly and I are opening the retreat center that we're right. working on, and I'm helping her teach classes and being her roadie, you know, because right. she does stone medicine. So right. she works with stones in massage therapy. So I'm the one carrying the 300 pounds of stones from place to place to help her do that. And then I'm her demo dummy too. So I get Perfect. To be the lay on the yes. table and demonstrate on me. So that whole wellness, more touchy-feely, more right side brain. Right. We've been left side for so long.
A lot.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm ready to go right side.
Understood. And what profession would you not like to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it would come down to any profession where, and there's probably thousands of them that are just rote. And mm-hmm. there are some people that like just going in and doing mm-hmm. what they do every day. And that's fine. More power to them. We need people to do that. I would not like a profession that did not provide some kind of new challenge on a regular basis and that didn't let me work with people.
Right. And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear your God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
So heaven exists. There's heaven on earth too. I'm more of a universe believing kind of person in the energy of the universe. And so I think it's a continuum. There's just a veil between us and whatever is beyond us. And so I would love to have Creator say to me, I can tell you did your best and you made a difference.
Excellent. So Pat, thank you so much for this time and for being a friend over the years. It means a lot to me. Where can people find you?
So right now, because I was formerly at Brinks and now I'm out doing my stuff on my own. So they can find me at LinkedIn, obviously. They can find me at my website is cyber-riskinsights.com.
Okay.
Certainly they can email me at patrick.benoit@cyber-riskinsights.com.
And so real quick, 30 seconds, what are you doing with the Cyber Risk Insights? What does it do?
So I believe there's obviously there's always a need for a virtual CISO kind of role or advisory kind of role always. But I think there's also a need. There's two schools of thought with regard to what's happening with boards and their mandate to have oversight over risk in companies. And I think most companies, their risk programs, notwithstanding financial institutions mm-hmm. and stuff, their risk programs are usually, hey, let's give it to the legal department. And surely some of your attorneys have time to do it on the side.
Right.
So I think there's a need now that the boards are being pressured more into that to take a more direct view of risk over the company holistically. So advisory to boards, because I think it's going to take a couple years before they can start bringing significant CISOs onto
right.
the boards.
Right.
So in the meantime, I think boards should consider highly contracting with folks like me to be their advisors on the board to give them that board view of overseeing risk not just what they get fed from the bottom up.
Right. Excellent. Well, I think it's much needed. It's boundary breaking because obviously I don't see no too many people are happening right now, right. Especially at a more personal level. I mean, right. You may get it from the big firms or things like that, sure. But I think folks that have been in the trenches doing the work like you have and like I have over the years, excellent way to approach it. Yeah. So best of luck on that. Pat Bimbaugh, everybody.
Yep. Thank you very much for having me. Great, great, great time with you always.
Thank you. Colleagues and friends, I renew the call. It's time to professionalize the role of the CISO. And with that, I wish you health, happiness, and success in your journey in becoming a professional CISO. Let's do this.
We're professionalizing the CISO role, so please subscribe to the Professional CISO Podcast.